The ads start now. Paddy Power sponsors the Off the Ball Football Show.
Welcome along to Wednesday night's edition of the Football Show. Richie McCormack here with you, joined in studio by the Irish Independent soccer correspondent, Dan McDonald. In the office prior to tonight's show, without wanting to crumble the fourth wall, there was discussion about the care factor involved in the Carabao Cup. I'm not going to say whose side, who was on what or where in the, on this side of history. All I'm just going to say is, I was on the right side of history, Dan. I was saying that this is some good stuff to look forward to tonight. And what we're seeing in Anfield bears that out. For those who are missing out on this one, Arsenal lead Liverpool by 5-4. There is still 14 minutes to play in this one as well. Potentially another equaliser, potentially penalties should they finish level after 90 minutes. Remember, no extra time in these ties. But Arsenal leading by 5-4. Just an outline of how the scores went. Skodran Mustafi's own goal gave Liverpool the lead on 6 minutes. Lucas Torreira then equalised on 19 after a parry from Quivian Kelleher, who's making his home debut, remember, for Liverpool tonight. Gabriel Martinelli, who's been a prolific scorer in the Cups for Arsenal, then put them 2-1 up on 26 minutes. That was 3 and 9 minutes for the break. James Milner scored from a penalty to make it 3-2 after Harvey Elliott was adjudged to have been fouled in the box. 9 minutes after halftime, Ainsley Maitland-Niles put Arsenal 4-2 up. That came from the misplaced back pass from James Milner towards Quivian Kelleher. Kelleher was left stranded by it, and Maitland-Niles managed to find the ball, scramble the ball into the net.
After a Mesut Ozil flick from...
Yes, around the post, which was amazing. Then, to outdo that, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, just short of the error mark, smashed one into the top corner with less than, from about 25 yards, 30 yards in around that country.
Yeah, and then he sort of was in that weird, do I celebrate or not limbo against the
former club. He started, and then he was like, oh no.
But then he was like, listen, this is so good that I couldn't just drop and go to the centre circle after doing this.
He sort of
semi-apologised.
Then on 62, Divock Origi levelled matters for Liverpool. It was a break from, I suppose, inside their own half. It was some good interplay. Basically ended up with Curtis Jones playing through the big Belgian striker, who turned his man, shot right-footed, and another brilliant goal, although Martinez in the Arsenal goal had something of a chocolate wrist to this one. So then they were level, and we were thinking, all right, we're in for penalties here, most definitely.
Never write this game off, though.
We're factoring in where we're going to place things in the Football Show, given the fact that we're going to have potentially penalties in this one, which we still might, of course. But Joe Willock, with another howitzer of a shot from about 25 yards after being played through by Matteo Guendouzi, the substitute, has put Arsenal 5-4 up.
Yeah. Look, I mean, you don't want to exaggerate, but it might be one of the greatest games in football history that we've just witnessed tonight. Like, I'm not citing recency bias for this sort of hyperbole, but it may be one of the best games we've ever seen. Or will it, because it's the competition that it's in, will anyone even remember it just happened in 2 days' time?
Oh, we will, yeah. It's been entertaining, but it's been strewn with mistakes.
Some amazing goals as well, though.
Yes.
I mean, some questionable moments of defending and goalkeeping, but also, you know, sort of three magic moments.
Yeah.
You know, the Ozil flick, and then the strikes from the Ox and from Willock. Like, great goals.
These are the things we're going to have to contextualise this, though, because people are going to talk about, is Mesut Ozil, quote-unquote, back? And it was Gary Breen talking to me last night saying, you know, you can still build a team around Mesut Ozil. And I'm saying, possibly about 5-6 years ago, maybe not now.
Mm.
But he's come back in tonight. He's shown flashes of what he's capable of. And that flick for Maitland-Niles' goal shows that there is the capability to do game-changing things.
Yeah, no, like he'll definitely. I mean, he's on such a bloody big contract, and he's there for a while. So he may as well make use of someone. My attitude would be make use of someone with that ability while he's there.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, Emery does not want to use him at certain times, and it would appear to be clear enough that he wouldn't be high up the pecking order. But I don't know if what he's done tonight will really change that view dramatically. Obviously, like, Irish eyes big time on Quivian Kelleher. I feel for him a bit. Like, Milner sold him short for a back pass. Not really his fault. I think the first two goals, he probably got a strong hand on one to try and take it away from a player following up. But Torreira was also following up.
Yeah.
So you can sort of make excuses for him. I mean, he had no chance with the Willock strike, really. And no chance with the third goal. But the first two...
The first two, there was definitely a sense that...
Yeah, the second one, he had a weak enough hand. And I guess, you know, even the general ones where Milner leaves the back pass short, you know, you could sort of argue, well, I guess he might, would he be used to say Alisson maybe been further off his line or whatever it might be. Milner was taking the grief afterwards, but I just think it's just damaging still for a young lad to have it on his CV that he's been in goals and conceded five. But it's one of those he'd be desperate though just to come out of it with the draw. Like, you know, he doesn't care now. Any kind of win, he's forgotten, but he'll probably be part of the scrutiny, you know, if they lose this game.
Yeah, in fairness to Creevan Kelleher, it's hard to judge these kinds of games because he's playing in front of a back four that hasn't played together before.
Yeah, absolutely.
To give people an idea, Liverpool's back four tonight is Nico Williams at right back, who I think is making his first full start for the club. Centre-half partnership is Joe Gomez. He's the senior partner alongside Seb Vandenberg, who they bought in the summer and is still a teenager. And then the left-hand side, you've got James Milner, who's essentially, he's played there before, but as we saw from the mistake, he's somewhat out of practice in that
position. Stopgap, yeah. And I mean, ultimately, like, Creevan Kelleher's in this position because of the work he's done over years and the regard he's held. And he's been in pre-season tours. He's played in matches. He has played with some of these players before, the senior players. And I don't think the people who know their stuff and had the faith in him to play him will have you know, changed their view on him on the basis of maybe one or two difficult moments. But it's probably more so in the perception of, say, supporters and the outside commentators that, like, his association with a slightly chaotic game, it's not ideal. I'm sure in time he'll reflect on a brilliant experience, but I'm sure part of him, like, the joy of playing against, you know, playing in front of the Kop, playing in Anfield against Arsenal, he mightn't be feeling that joy tonight. But I'm sure in time he'll talk about this as a big experience in his life.
Amazingly, there are other games on tonight. Aston Villa are leading Wolves by 2-1. They all had three different kickoff times, by the way. Liverpool 7:30, Villa were 7:45, and then Chelsea, Manchester.
That's for the Asian market for the car.
But both the Liverpool and the Chelsea games are on Sky, so it's a bizarre one. But Villa are leading at home to Wolves 2-1. El Ghazi got the opening goal for them in 28 minutes. Patrick Coutinho equalised for Wolves on 54. But just 3 minutes later, El Mohamedy put Aston Villa 2-1 up. And in the other game, Manchester United, through that Marcus Rashford penalty, which we described in the show a little bit earlier on, it was fouled by Marcus Alonso and Daniel James. Rashford stepped up and fired to really Caballero's right-hand side. Caballero dived the wrong way. And United continuing to lead 4 minutes into the second half there. We'll keep you updated on all of these. There's less than seven and a half minutes to play now, 7 minutes exactly, at Anfield. A couple of bright spots in this game, because we're talking about, you know, unfortunate performances or unfortunate kind of scorelines from Creevan Kelleher's behalf, as we see Arsenal trying to find their way through to possibly score a sixth. Gabriel Martinelli for Arsenal, he's been one of their consistent performers in the Cup so far this season.
Again, 18 still only. Yeah.
But looks like he could well be a player for them.
Yeah, no, like he's, you know, he's been sort of phased into a role of prominence. And actually, you would think that, again, you rightly point out, it's sort of a makeshift Liverpool team, but still he's done it at Anfield in a game of substance of sorts, you know, and you would think that he's getting to the point where actually, you know, why not just throw him in there for a league match, you know, and really properly put your faith in him, because he is a young fella. He can sort of lift the mood around Arsenal. They've signed spent 72 million on Nicolas Pepe. You know, Emery, just generally, you know, sometimes if you can throw your weight behind a young player and someone who's just coming in with a bit of freshness, it can try and lift the mood. And yeah, he's been positive.
Harvey Elliott for Liverpool.
Harvey Elliott, he was actually responsible defensively for one of the earlier goals.
Third.
It was hours ago.
They kind of melted into
one. The earlier goals.
It was the third. There was a sequence of passes that I think was played out from Kelleher towards Williams, who was trying to find Elliott, who was the wide on the right in midfield at that stage. And Elliott tried to play it back towards Joe Gomez, completely misplaced the pass, and then Arsenal were able to find the way in from there. But other than that, in an attacking sense, he's looked fantastic. His speed of attack, his ability to pick out a pass, the fact that he's able to draw fouls as well, which you saw for the penalty, is a huge bonus for a player.
Yeah, like, it's a great competition. You go back to the point of, does it matter? I mean, yeah, it's not something that sort of makes or breaks seasons, although it's never really harmed Man City taking it seriously, you know, compared to other clubs. And okay, I know they have the squad to do it, but you know, these Premier League clubs, like, they spend a lot of money on young talent from around the world, and don't necessarily always trust them. And I sort of quite like watching some of these nights and seeing these players. I mean, it's been very good for Ireland this season, this competition. You know, it allowed Aaron Connolly to get some experience before he was thrown into the first team. It's allowing Caoimhín Kelleher to play. You know, Troy Parrott, unfortunately, Spurs were knocked out. If they'd got by Colchester, he might have got another couple of appearances under his belt. So, yeah, it's not like the high-end, you know, sharp end. This is the massively important stuff.
Look at how all clubs are now approaching the FA Cup in January. Like, whether it's Championship sides, middle table sides in the Premier League, or ones at the very top, like, they're rotating in the same manner that we used to think of the League Cup about 10 years ago or more, and how it's developed now. But it's coming out of it seems like the FA Cup ties, third and fourth round, are a very awkward time for clubs where they'd rather not be playing them. Whereas these, they're just like, ah, grand, sure, it's part of it.
Yeah,
anyway.
It's midweek, nighttime games. There's something about under lights, you know, how the games are structured. And like, I don't like the negativity towards the FA Cup because it still can give people brilliant sort of moments and memories. And in many respects, like, the FA Cup has become a victim to like Premier League survival. Like, the clubs that have really damaged the FA Cup have actually been the likes of Newcastle and other teams not taking it seriously at all. It's not really been the top clubs, because they've actually invariably ended up getting to the business end of it anyway. It's more so the middle tier clubs and how it's less important than coming 13th as opposed to 16th or whatever it might be.
Well, that's down to the finances.
The Saturday afternoon games, it feels like it's getting in the way of a league weekend, and there's a lethargy around the whole thing, whereas these midweek games, it's sort of, the nights are drawing in, watch some good level of football here. People have a sort of a warmth towards the League Cup nights. It surprises them. Whereas the FA Cup, actually, there's a big sort of massive philosophical debate about it every time it comes round.
I think there's
no expectations of tonight. People aren't that disappointed if the League Cup is sort of thrown by someone. Whereas with the FA Cup, just people lose the plot, and it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that it's not that inspiring.
We mentioned at the very, very top of tonight's show the ongoing story surrounding Richard Keogh, who was involved in that car accident a number of weeks back in September, which resulted in the court appearances of two of his teammates and their subsequent bans from driving, fines of 6 weeks' wages from the club. We found out tonight that Richard Keogh was sacked by Derby County, the Republic of Ireland defender. Derby have since issued a statement, albeit a brief one. I'll read it out to you now. Derby County Football Club has completed the disciplinary hearing regarding Richard Keogh in respect of his involvement in the events of Tuesday, September the 24th. As a result of that process, Mr. Keogh has had his contract terminated with immediate effect for gross misconduct. He has the right of appeal within 14 days. As we have said from the outset, the club will not tolerate any of its players or staff behaving in a manner which puts themselves, their colleagues and members of the general public at risk of injury or worse, and which brings the club into disrepute. The club will be making no further comment at this time regards the matter until the conclusion of any potential appeal. Richard Keogh is said to be on €24,000 a week. He was going to have a contract that ran until summer of 2020, June of 2020. It seems like his injury is going to take him beyond that. This was a surprising development, given the fact that the two players who were behind the wheels on that particular night both remain at the club.
Yeah, I think there is a suggestion his contract is for another 18 months, actually, but that's neither here. It might be an option or whatever it might be. But either way, that is the key part. I'm just trying to write a piece on this for tomorrow. And I think that is the headline that a lot of people will read the headline about Keogh's plight, but they will more so go back to what you said there and say, well, hang on, what has happened to Tom Lawrence and Mason Bennett? I mean, what has happened to Tom Lawrence and Mason Bennett is that Tom Lawrence has played every game recently.
Yeah.
And Mason Bennett...
He's been a sub on occasion.
He's more on the fringes generally. Like, Lawrence is probably a better player, a more high-profile player. Keogh is left in this scenario. Like, the story was earlier today that he'd been offered a pay cut to stay. You know, a take-it-or-leave-it offer. It's like, you can stay for the remainder of your deal. However, you will have to accept these reduced terms, and that wasn't acceptable to him. And I think it's probably safe to assume that this will probably go down a legal route now. I mean, Dave Heitner references piece in The Guardian that broke the Keogh story initially, that, you know, he's consulted his lawyers in the PFA, and that's the way that it's going to go. As I touched on it a small bit earlier on, I mean, the Kyo stance, you know, Derby's statement, you read it out there, and it refers to, it touches on language to do with, you know, the improper conduct and values, and, you know, how you have to be conscious of your, how you carry yourself and conduct, you know, but ultimately you would say that Tom Lawrence and Mason Bennett also were in breach of those values.
You would say,
you know, that, were in breach of those terms and conditions, but the difference between their situation and Richard Keogh's situation is that they're fit and they're younger. And, you know, Richard Keogh is 34 in August, and, you know, Tom Lawrence is 25, I think, Mason Bennett is 23, or the other way around. And they don't have injuries that keep them out, but even if they did, they would have a sell-on value, and they would be worth more to Derby than Richard Keogh will be by the time that he is back fit again. And it's very hard to look at things, and I know that there's been an internal inquiry and a probe, and I don't think Derby would have taken this action sort of flippantly. Mm. You can be sure that they, you know, they would have taken advice to go the way that they've gone. But it's hard to avoid the conclusion that if Richard Keogh was fit now, that, you know, if he had a minor knee issue and he was out for 6 weeks, that the decision with regard to gross misconduct would probably have been different. That's just my opinion. But I don't think it's a wild one.
It's a pretty grubby state of affairs, and I know football generally is. We can't necessarily say that it's the most morally astute of games. But to see two players who've been, you know, convicted of drink driving, who've avoided prison sentences, but have been handed driving bans, have been fined 6 weeks wages, remaining on the books of the club just because they happen to be fit and younger, it is... Leaves a bit of a sour taste. Nobody in this, you know, should have been involved in the situation to begin with. And from that point of view, I don't think anybody has any sympathy on that front. But if we're comparing punishments and reactions to this one, it just seems a little bit askew.
Yeah, exactly. I think, like, I think how you phrase it there is fair enough. I wouldn't be pushing the Richard Keogh being a victim team too far, you know, because...
He should have had enough cop on to not be in that situation.
Like his actions were still dreadful. But it has been clear from Derby's initial statement on this that they had a particular issue with Richard Keogh's conduct on the night. And I guess if you look at the age thing another way, they clearly feel also that as a senior player, he should have known better. Hmm. And I can appreciate how that view was reached. But I'm sure if he was a senior player that should have known better and he had sustained no injuries, I think he would still be on their books.
Yeah. Don't forget, our football coverage is with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit dunlewy.net. We are playing the third of five additional minutes at Anfield. It's still Liverpool 4, Arsenal 5 in this remarkable fourth round Carabao Cup tie. It looks as if Arsenal are going to be in that quarterfinal draw at the expense of the Premier League leaders. And it is going to be that Joe Willock howitzer that separates the sides in the end. But Liverpool still have just about 2 minutes to try and force a penalty shootout at Anfield, as we see Divock Origi take the ball in his chest and try and turn, pardon me, Adrian Brewster, finds his way out wide to Curtis Jones, who's going to square the ball, and it's in! Would you, Adam and Eber, it's Divock Origi.
Live penalty value coming soon.
They're absolutely.
What are they going to do?
We're going to have to hold off on a little bit of pre-recorded stuff that we had in the camp from Simon Peach, I think, because it is 5-5 at Anfield. Liverpool 5, Arsenal 5. Let's be honest, there's a minute still to go and out of time, but who's against the
Grieving goal? Kelleher's night is... Forget everything we said earlier. It's all out the window. Grieving Kelleher is on the verge of the dream, the Anfield debut of his dreams.
Yeah.
JP, even Joe Willock's howitzer, which you've described it as that around three times in the last 3 minutes, that they might even be forgotten now.
I'm going to take you to task for your haranguing of Mick McCarthy shortly enough as well. But we have, 4 minutes played in added time. We still have to have the restart here.
Keeper's actually been poor for Arsenal.
A couple of these goals, for both of the Origi goals.
Has actually, I think in the keeper watch, Kelleher probably might even still shade it. It's a low bar, but still.
If you're a Liverpool fan, you're kind of holding out hope, because the chocolate wrist from Martinez here tonight have been something else entirely. That did come off the shin of Divock Origi. He was like getting down low to angle that shot past. and pass Martinez and equal the scores, level the scores. 5-5 is the latest from Anfield. We are heading for a penalty shootout there. We could well be at Stamford Bridge as well. Chelsea have just equalised at home to Manchester United. Michy Batshuayi has gotten that goal just past the hour mark for Frank Lampard's side, cancelling out that Marcus Rashford penalty. Arsenal pressing for an incredible sixth and what would definitely be a winner. 2-1 to Aston Villa with 8 minutes to go at Villa Park. We will be back after these, we think, with penalties from Anfield.
The ads start now. Paddy Power sponsors the Off the Ball Football Show.
We're heading for penalties at Anfield because after 90 minutes in the fourth round of the Carabao Cup, it finished Liverpool 5, Arsenal 5. It was one of those nights at Anfield. Unai Emery looks a slightly pained individual on the sideline as we await which side they're going to actually have the penalties into. James Milner and Hector Bellerin are your captains for the night. The toss of the coin just taking place on the halfway line at Anfield. James Milner has, it seems, the call for the penalties, or at least for the call for the coin. Neither one has called it. They're gone again. Which side's it going to be?
We can't commentate on the coin
toss.
Dan,
we're doing this.
What the hell?
We're like, doing this, Dan. This is where we are now. This is where we are. Because we've been forced into not playing the Stephen Kelly clip that we had from MoTB AM this morning, which you should check out on our social channels because it was good stuff. But we have had the decision for the penalties. It looks like they're going to be shooting into the cup.
Yeah, I'm going to analyse that now and say, what does that mean?
What does that mean in the great scheme of things?
I mean, it's probably good news for Liverpool, you'd say, Richie.
Well, you'd have to think, Dan. You'd have to think at this late.
Although, on the flip side of things, it could put extra pressure on the Liverpool takers, and it may be a bad thing. Covered both of those eventualities.
Wow.
Stay with us for the rest of this shootout.
I haven't actually thought about it in those terms. Yeah. It could well be a good thing, or indeed a bad thing. Creevy Kelleher, of course, in the Liverpool goals you mentioned, he hasn't had the greatest of nights, not only
62.
For the fact that he conceded five goals. The squad numbers on display here, by the way, tonight have been absolutely disgraceful. Whatever about Harvey Elliott's haircut.
Premier League flaunting its wealth.
Oh,
it's just largesse. It's like 62.
Hello.
It's conceivable they have 61 other players as well.
It is, yeah. This is basically everybody they have listed. Hector Bellerin, who kind of looks like Pete Molloy, who means nothing to you. He's in the box at the moment. He is about to take Arsenal's first penalty into
he's
the
then watching himself take a penalty.
He is.
He's going to cut your mic if things go badly wrong
like
here.
It's like a quantum leap kind of scenario here. He's outside of himself watching the Spanish version of himself take a penalty which has found its way into the Liverpool
Spain
net.
Spain against Ireland penalty shootout.
Don't mention the war.
Spirit of today. Creevy Kelleher, of course, probably born, 2 years before that maybe.
Don't even.
He was just...
He was a nipper. He doesn't remember. He has no recollection of
wandering around the house. But he probably turned off the TV halfway through while they were watching it.
I bet, though, in fairness, Jurgen Klopp has realised that he does have 11 players on the pitch tonight. James Milner, who scored that penalty in normal time for Liverpool 2 minutes before half time, in fact, is going to take Liverpool's first
He'll
with
miss.
His right foot. Little stuttering run up
no.
and no problems. Low and strong and to the left of Martinez in the Arsenal goal. And we are locked at one apiece. After one penalty each,
he turned around to the cop. Was it turning around to the cop or to Quivin to sort of, give them the old come
G
on?
You give them a G up.
Yeah.
One of those things that again we were mentioning outside. We mentioned haranguing as a word you don't often say in spoken conversation.
There's a lot of words that you use in football, print journalism that you never use in normal life.
G'ing up is you don't see G'ing up in.
You never say give them a G up there.
No,
you know.
Just, but you know, if you've written that down in your piece. He's trying to
it
G
makes
up
perfect sense.
The cop crowd. Matteo Guendouzi is tasked with taking the second Arsenal penalty. Right footed again from him. Kelleher guesses right, but it's
right
low
way.
And into the corner. And Arsenal lead by two goals to one.
A lot of words like that, though, really, football. Like you never actually say what happened last night. You know, there's a bit of a row. What happened? Well, Richie launched a broadside in the direction of JP.
I
you know,
heard
whatever.
Broadside.
Like he's.
JP was launching broadside.
There was a war of, what happened last night? Yeah, there was a bit of a war of words. Bit of war of words outside. You never use that in everyday language.
Yeah, is travelled to when you're playing away from home is another one. It's a night for the right footers. Adam Lallana is stepping up again, this time for Liverpool's second penalty. He looks a slightly more nervy figure. Big inhale and exhale from the ex-Southampton man. And he has found the net too. It's 2-2.
Will the penalty shootout outscore the match?
What if we get to the point where the keepers have to take it?
It's going to be very confusing because, like, you know, if it was 5-5 and then they won 5-4 on penalties, people are going to think, well, is this a mistake?
We're trying to figure out what Chisler is now making his way forwards to take this third Arsenal penalty. They are looking to head themselves into the lead in this cup tie, take another step closer to the quarter final draw. Third Arsenal penalty upcoming. Now Caoimhín Kelleher doing a little hop on the line. Dan's quickly googling this one as we find out that he's found the net again. With power and pace and past Kelleher again. Kelleher though is pulling a Paddy Bonner against Romania in 1990. He's ever so slightly guessing
he's
right each and every time.
He's getting closer every single time. And I'm trying to figure out who actually took that penalty kick.
It's going to be Rian Brewster anyway that comes up for Liverpool's third tonight. Top quality radio. This is going to get us an Imro this time next
this
year.
This is
Rian Brewster shooting into the cup. It is Martinez in the Arsenal goal. Stands between him and levelling up this shootout at three apiece. Martinez doing a little dance on the line, trying his best to put the England underage World Cup winner off his stride. Another right-footed penalty it will be, this time from Brewster. He takes a little stuttering run-up and again finds the net. We're now in a generation of people who are taking penalties without much problem. This is kind of disturbing.
We it was Martinelli who got the penalty at 3-2 for Arsenal there. But yeah, it's staggeringly high quality of penalty.
We saw this during the last World Cup as well. Penalties have actually improved somewhat, especially for
less than Manchester United, of course, where they're missing 2 a week.
Well, that's true. But that's probably kind of indicative of their own issues at the club. Danny Ceballos, who came on as a second half substitute for Arsenal in tonight's game, is going to be the man tasked with putting them 4-3 up in the penalty shootout. Another right footer for Arsenal. And it's Caoimhín Kelleher again trying to make himself big on the line. Kelleher saves. Guesses right, and Kelleher saves. He could well be the hero for Liverpool tonight.
He turns to the
call.
What a moment.
What a moment. The man's conceded 5 in normal time on his own debut, and he could well be the hero of the piece.
We did say earlier in the show that he will not look back on his debut fondly.
Are we looking back? Are we going to look at a penalty shootout that underscores the actual 90 minutes?
We could, yeah. This is his moment. Yeah.
That's JP saying it's a carbon copy of Tomofta, or Bonner save against Tomofta in 1990 in Genoa. Same height-ish.
Yeah.
And he was getting closer every time. We mentioned the parallels between them.
Yeah.
Is Caoimhín Kelleher the new Paddy Bonner?
There's been no Cascarino figure to sort of shoe one in, though.
This could well be Divock Origi's job to send half of the Anfield penalty spot into the goal with him. He hasn't. He sent the ball there. Liverpool lead 4-3. And this could well be all over should the next Arsenal penalty taker happen to find those paws of Kelleher again, or indeed the grateful arms of somebody sitting behind the goal in the cup, because we are going to see, I think, is this Joe Willock or Ainsley Maitland-Niles taking their step up now? We'll find out momentarily, because we've got no sound on this, because we can't broadcast it, because we'd get in serious trouble if we did that. It is Maitland-Niles, because you can tell by the lengthy name on his back. It is going to take this one for Arsenal to keep them in this. He misses, Liverpool are through, having been behind so often during the course of tonight's 90 minutes. Ainsley Maitland-Niles to level it at 4-4, but still give Liverpool the opportunity to put themselves through. It's a slow run-up, and it's a cool penalty. Kelleher again guesses the right-hand side, but Arsenal have levelled this shootout. Liverpool do, though, in the next few moments, have the chance to win this cup tie. All things going well, we will be hearing from Simon Peach on Southampton's travails. Kind of seems secondary when Curtis Jones is taking his step up. He has the chance to be the hero for Liverpool tonight, as he heads towards the penalty spot. The youngster who happened to set up Divock Origi for Liverpool's fourth this evening, he originally helped them level the tie. He could help them win it overall and send them through to the quarterfinals. Curtis Jones has done just that. Liverpool are through. A cool penalty from the teenager. It's finished Liverpool 5, Arsenal 4 on penalties. Let's head to Southampton.
And Leicester City have 9 and have equaled Manchester United's record for the biggest ever Premier League win. It's the last act of an extraordinary story.
It would be easy to say it because of the red card after 10 minutes, but I think it's not the moment to discuss every goal and every scene and the high of the result. I think the only thing is, what I say is that I take the 100% responsibility for this result today. It was a no performance from my team, and this cannot happen in this way. And I'm only say the best I've seen today in the stadium was, beside the opponent, was the crowd that was staying in the stadium, our crowd that was staying in the stadium, the guys that were staying here, how they act, is more than we deserve today. And I say, apologize for this no performance today.
That's the sound of Southampton head coach Ralph Hasenhüttl speaking after Friday night's record 9-0 defeat at home to Leicester City. Southampton's biggest defeat and the biggest ever away win for a side in the English top flight. To discuss that and a little bit more surrounding the circumstances of that loss for Southampton, I'm joined on the line by Simon Peach, the chief football writer for PA. Simon, you're very welcome to the show. Firstly, you were at the Etihad last night, I know, to watch the Carabao Cup tie between Manchester City and Southampton, a 3-1 win for the holders last night. How had things improved, if any, and what was the general feeling around the club last night?
Well, it had improved. They managed to cut the goal tally down by a third and managed to score, so that's a start. In my role as a journalist, I tend to cover Man United, so I don't often get a chance to see Southampton live, which is actually a good thing at the moment. But I decided to go last night. I actually bought the ticket on the Monday, so sat in the away end. And I was amazed how many fans turned up and how they stuck with the team, given the fact that they know they've got Man City again coming up at the weekend and things weren't going particularly well from the start. They're on the back foot. But the Southampton players showed spirit. They showed fight. They showed a bit of tactical discipline, which I think was the key thing that was missing the other night. And although it was a 3-1 loss, there was shoots of some kind of positive. Let's just hope that they can build on it when they return to the Etihad Stadium on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, it was a case of basically ball up and hope for the best, I think, in the first half, especially that they conceded two goals. They didn't manage a shot on target, I don't think, until just past the hour mark. But there was a definite sense of, I mean, we're not going to concede, we're not going to be pummeled in the same way we were on Friday night. And at least that, as you say, is a step up.
Yeah, Shane Long, who I like, in attack with someone else, wasn't in attack with anyone else. So he was chasing blind alleys in the first half, working as hard as he could, but the balls naturally kept coming back. But Saints stuck with a back five with Højbjerg, who's the captain, and a central midfielder playing at left wing back with Brian Bertrand suspended after that red card against Leicester. So it was a bit of I think what might have been overlooked by some people is that the fact that was, as much as it was a City scratch side, it was a largely reserved side for Southampton as well. So it was a good chance to get rid of all the negative energy. I was quite impressed by the way the club handled it in terms of making sure that the wages from Friday night went to the Saints Foundation, the charitable arm of the club, and that the players just kept their heads down. They didn't try and make excuses. The club did try and make excuses. They just, in a way, they took it on the chin. They didn't really have any other choice, but they've regrouped and it's how they kick on now.
Yeah, that's the big question. And I guess a lot of that is founded in how the club is structured at the moment, because Southampton, from the outside looking in, appear to be one of the better structured sides, especially among the kind of middle rank of Premier League teams, you can say, going back 3, 4, 5 years. Whereas now they've suffered a succession of key departures in key roles at boardroom level, or at least between boardroom level and management, that has seen Hasenhüttl unfortunately become somewhat isolated at the club. That's the impression that I get anyway.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things with Southampton, a club like Southampton, I'm as guilty as anyone working in the media myself. They become a story when things go bad or incredibly well. The rest of the time, they're just left to their own devices, to be quite honest. For people that haven't been looking, this has been happening for 3 or 4 years since Ronald Koeman left. The signings that have been made have been mostly disastrous. All that Virgil van Dijk money, the world record fee for a defender, has gone on players like Guido Carrillo, who after 3 months the club gave up on, and he was club record signing. The remains, I think, is about 20-odd million. Terrible, terrible signings made. Players leaving, players becoming unhappy, players becoming disenfranchised with the club that they joined, being the model Premier League mid-sized club. Now no longer that. Yes, there have been some key departures. Personally, I don't feel many of those departures are particularly bad for the club. I don't think they were doing their job particularly well in the first place in a number of those cases. But at the same time, they do need replacing. At the moment, there is a structural void. And then it goes down to the Gao family. The Gao family are a very rich Chinese family that bought 80% of the club a year or so ago. Maybe even longer. Time flies when you're losing 9-0. But they haven't shown any leadership so far, in my humble opinion. They don't speak publicly, which is fine. Roman Abramovich doesn't speak publicly, and that's just gone fine. But the difference is there's no structure, and they want it to be self-sustaining from the looks of things, which is fine. But to be self-sustaining, you need to be buying low and selling high rather than buying at a medium level and then losing the money. So they need to refine the soul of the club. But I don't think it's as bad as it's been painted out in some quarters, although that's inevitable after a 9-0 loss.
What kind of sense of hope do you have from it then?
Well, the players aren't that bad. And Hasan Huddle, look, he may well feel that there's a gap above him right now, but he came into the job when Mark Hughes was leading the side to the Championship. It was another year facing the drop. This didn't come as a surprise to him. There's been a lot of discussion about how his assistant manager leaving in the summer has affected things. That is a valid question. But Hasan Huddle as an astute manager, we've seen that in his reigns elsewhere, so it can't be fully put on him. And the players are good players. You've got numerous internationals in there. But the problem with Southampton sometimes is that they lose their way, and it doesn't, as is a key word for everyone, for every Premier League side now, there doesn't seem to be the same type of leaders anymore.
I mean, a lot was pointed towards Pierre-Emile Højbjerg, is one of the better performers in the side in the last couple of seasons, being their captain at just 24. Along with that, you looked on Friday night and there didn't seem to be anybody. I hate going in for the John Terry fist-pumping, rallying the troops kind of stuff to a degree, but there didn't seem to be anybody on the pitch to get a hold of things and say, listen, lads, we actually need to just sit in here and keep things tight for 10 to 15, don't concede again within that period, and then we'll see where we go from there. Everything seemed to snowball on Friday night, and that seemed indicative of that lack of leadership on the pitch, at least from them.
Yeah, Pierre-Emile Højbjerg, the problem with him is he's the one that always fronts up, so the fans are kind of, while respecting him, are tired of the same voice putting their head on the chopping block when it comes to fronting up when a bad result happens or a bad performance. Too few other people. Ryan Bertrand was the captain of this club. He's not anymore. And there's that. Just because you're not captain doesn't mean you can't show leadership. Of course, he was sent off the other day, but he's been involved in plenty of games where things have gone awry, and there hasn't been that person grabbing things. Defensively, I think, is where a lot of the issues lie. Both in terms of the leadership and the quality. Southampton have been blessed since returning to the Premier League with some outstanding players, from Jose Font, who came up with them and is obviously now a Euro 2016 winner playing the Champions League with Lille. You had Toby Alderweireld, you had Virgil van Dijk, and there isn't that same quality now. So Hasan Huddle needs to find a way of getting them to play together. It does seem like he's going for the, which he certainly did last night with the Gareth Southgate approach of, if I don't have two quality centre-backs, then I'll put in three half-decent ones and try and shore it up. So I don't think that's a bad tactic, but they just need to get through this the next game in the Etihad Stadium and then really kick on, because they haven't won at home this season. The only point they've got is at St Mary's against Man United, which probably says as much about Man United as it does about Southampton.
I mean, you mentioned the likes of Alderweireld, you mentioned the likes of Van Dijk and the other players that came up with them from the Championship, hung around for a couple of seasons as well. The other thing that Southampton were notorious for was producing their own. I mean, James Ward-Prowse is one of those who's still there, and they've had a conveyor belt of really, really good young players come through the squad that seems to have slowed down considerably over the past, I guess, probably 18 months to 2 years in particular. From our perspective, seeing Michael Obafemi come through has been a boon, but beyond that, it's hard to see where the others have come from.
Yeah, obviously, in all academy structures, there's peaks and troughs. This does seem to be... actually, a lot of academy players have got minutes. They just haven't managed to stay in the side since Hasan Huddle has arrived, from Callum Slattery to Kane Ramsey. Lots of people that have been given a chance and have gone away and are still around the club and aren't in the first team reckoning right now. Jake Bokens, who's a highly rated defender, made his debut last night towards the end. Obviously, you're not going to throw him in from the start. For the fear of the damage it could cause him long term. But yeah, you're right. The academy structure isn't producing the players as it once was, but I don't think that's a particular negative about the club. I just think that's just how it goes. Some years you'll get Gareth Bale, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. I mean, there was one year where Saints had Luke Shaw, Callum Chambers, James Ward-Prowse, Matt Target, who was sold to Aston Villa in the summer for around $17 million. You get that crop, but then you might have a fallow period for a few years. So, of all the things that are going wrong at Southampton right now, I'm hopeful that the academy isn't one of them.
From a plus point, I guess, it was heartening to see that there was a lot of talk on Friday night of, I don't see how Raf Hasan Huddle can survive this. I don't see how he can continue on with the squad. The hierarchy seemed to be pretty adamant that he will maintain leadership of that squad, that he will take them through to January, would seem. And it's a case of how they use January, how they use that transfer window, if he's able to use it, I guess, as well, to move on and secure their safety this season.
Yeah, the club at the moment, if you're going to be behind a manager after a 9-0 home loss, then you'd think he's got a bit of time. He's a good manager. He hasn't got the tools to make the team play in the way he wants to do. And again, when I was speaking earlier about clubs that fly under the radar unless things are going particularly wrong or really well, is that they don't notice the issues. And the main issues at Southampton have been these dreadful signings, which have been on the books but have needed to be replaced. So you've got 5-6 players out on loan. Fraser Forster, the highest paid employee in Southampton Football Club's history, still got 2.5 years left on loan at Celtic, where Elianusi also is, who was signed for around $15 million last year. Yeah. Guido Correa, the club record signings out on loan, just to get him off the books. Wesley Hoot, who's had a dreadful time since arriving from Southampton as a Holland international, has now played for Antwerp on loan. Saints are having to pick up a lot of these wages, and they needed to sell as much as they could as well, because the club are trying to be sustainable, and the club therefore couldn't make the signs they did. They brought in Kevin Danzo right at the end on loan, a hefty loan fee, but it was a roll of the dice. Moussa Gnappo looks like their first good, what you'd call a Southampton signing, probably since Ronald Koeman's era, but he's injured at the moment. And Shay Adams, the club will be hoping, comes good. He was fantastic for Birmingham in the Championship, has yet to do it. So they do need to make signings. Centre-back has been an area they need to make signings for a long time, but I don't know whether it's a blind spot or, as I mentioned, the financial, not issues, but the financial realities of a club like Southampton being running the way they are.
Do we know if the players are still good with Hasenhüttl?
Well, if they're not, that says a lot about them as well, because they've not been happy with Pellegrino, with Hughes, with Puel, and sometimes they need to point the mirror on themselves.
It's that run of fixtures, I guess, over the next while, beyond the two City games, the one that we just had last night, and then, of course, to come in the league this Saturday. That will, I guess, be the acid test of what they're made of, because they are against those teams that are around them or that are going to be around them in that scrap against relegation towards March and April.
And it has been forgotten a bit how Southampton haven't had an awful season up until the Leicester game. There's been some bad days at the office, as any mid-table side has, but they've not been dreadful. They just seem to be this is the time where Southampton will get a kicking, and quite rightfully so. I'm hopeful that things will turn around, but what I think is key is that they need to get that win at home. I believe it's something like 15 Premier League wins out of 62 home games. It's just not on. The fans pay a lot of money to go, and they're not getting anything and any hope, because the kind of trade-off being a Southampton fan is that, yes, your best players will leave, but at least you get to see some entertaining football for a while. And they're not even getting that at the moment, and they're kind of at a loss. So hopefully there's that home win that can give them a shot in the arm and kick them forward, maybe even an away win on Saturday, but that looks a lot.
That'd be very hopeful. But I guess it is in the same sense that the 9-0 against Leicester shines a light on all of the bad aspects of the club. As soon as you get that home win and get over the hump of that, that will, you know, crack open another door that can hopefully lead towards a few more points being garnered along the way.
Yeah, and the table's quite tight. I mean, you could, with two wins, you can jump up a hell of a long way.
Yeah.
So I don't think all is lost at Southampton, and I think the response yesterday said a lot about the character of the group, if not the quality, because as much as Man City were playing a reserve defence, they also had Aguero and Jesus leading the line, flanked by Bernardo Silva and Riyad Mahrez, so it wasn't a bad attacking quartet. So it's an interesting time to be associated with Southampton, to be a Southampton fan, and obviously interesting from the outside, because no one's ever seen anything like this in the modern era, a 9-0 defeat for a top-flight side. So it's big questions, and hopefully they continue to answer them just for the sanity of the good people that do work at the club.
Sure thing. Simon Peach, Chief Football Writer with PA, thanks so much for speaking to us this evening.
No worries.
The ads start now. Paddy Power sponsors the Off The Ball Football Show.
Liverpool are through to the quarterfinals of the Carabao Cup, courtesy of a 5-4 penalty victory over Arsenal at Anfield after the sides finished 5-5, a memorable debut for Quievin Kelleher in front of the Kop. He conceded 5, and he also saved the crucial penalty, and most of all, he got to speak to Guy Havard.
Quievin, you were the hero in the penalties. Tell us about your save. Yeah, obviously we do a lot of work with the goalie coaches on penalties and stuff, and I spoke just before the shootout of where certain players are going, so we've done our homework, and then I managed to go the right way and make the save, so it was good, yeah.
It wasn't a good night to be a goalkeeper though, was it?
It was a bit of a crazy one, yeah, kind of like five goals in pass, and I didn't have time to blink really, it's just some strange goals as well, so yeah, it was a bit of a strange night. But
this,
a good one in the end.
This man gave you the opportunity to be a hero though, didn't he, with that last minute equaliser?
Yeah, of course, he always comes up with massive goals and you need him, does Div, so... No, he's unreal tonight, Sonny, and the whole team tonight, we never, like you said, we never died, and we kept going right till the very end.
You've obviously had to watch from the sidelines for so much of the time. To be out there tonight, in front of the Kop as well, making your first appearance at Anfield, how was it for you?
What dreams are made of, really. Winning the shootout in the Kop, like the atmosphere there at the end was unbelievable. I've never had an experience like that in my life, like, so it was an unreal feeling, to be honest. I can't describe it.
Hell of a home debut.
It's the young lad from Cork saving a penalty in front of the Kop.
As you do. Standard Wednesday.
You know,
night.
What did you do with your Wednesday?
Sat here with you,
Wednesday,
Dan.
Tuesday, Wednesday.
Sat here with you, Kaya, calling a
you're
coin toss.
You're not 20, though.
Calling a coin toss. That's the highlight of my night.
Some highbrow stuff.
Ah, sure, look, you know, I didn't even get a chance to harangue you about your confrontation with McCarthy.
There was
yesterday.
A confrontation.
It came to blows.
I just meant the point that, like, you know.
No, we'll get, you know what?
Not about negativity.
No. We'll get to it tomorrow. I want to save a bit of surprise in people's lives. Because I guess we get to talk about Queeve and Kelleher in terms of the New Zealand game now, too.
We do, although I'm not sure what Stephen Kenny's view on this all would be. Like, it depends what story with Kieran Westwood and a few other keepers would be, I think. But possibly.
We shall see. That's to come tomorrow. Just to let you know, Manchester United, through a brilliant Marcus Rashford free, leading 2-1 away to Chelsea during the injury time there. They might be finished by the time I tell you this, because earlier we asked you to identify our mystery voice. It was, of course, Ronnie O'Sullivan. And congratulations to Giroud Healy. You're in our end-of-week draw to win that prize of a trip to Stamford Bridge for Chelsea versus Lille on December the 10th in the Champions League. Don't worry if you missed out tonight. We'll give you another chance to enter on tomorrow night's show. It's all thanks to Virgin Media Sport. They're freeing sport by providing customers with a wide array of sports as part of their standard TV pack. Tomorrow morning, OTBAM, our sports breakfast show, is live from 7:30 a.m. You'll get it on our social channels and on OTB Sports Radio at offtheball.com tomorrow night. We're back at 7. John Giles will be in studio after 5:30 as well, and we'll look forward to the FAI Cup final in the company of the man to my left, one Dan McDonald. One final launch forward by Willie Caballero, but I think Chelsea are going to be defeated and not in that draw for the quarterfinals, which takes place tomorrow morning on Zoe Ball's Breakfast Show.
Welcome to 1999.
We'll talk to you tomorrow. Take care.
The ads start now. Paddy Power sponsors the Off the Ball Football Show.